Thanks for downloading this podcast from Coracle Online. This podcast was recorded at the Blue Debate at the IOD in London. And the theme for the debate was exploring the opportunities and threats of shipping's information boom. With a panel made up of James Tweed from Coracle, Nick Brown from Lloyd's Register, Neil Wise from IHS Fairplay, Corinne Langlois from the IMO, and Amy Pascoe from Blue Communications, many themes were delved into, and this podcast will be published in a couple of parts, so please do look out for the next one.
We have to understand the context for the brief, which was 30 people in a room last time discussing professionalisation of communicating and shipping, and one of the core threads that really developed, and we had the editor of Lloyd's List in the room, we had the head of environment, the lead environment journalist from Reuters in the room, was social digital media. And I think the context in the brief is all about, we know it's coming, as Amy alludes to. I mean, it would be a very unempirical straw poll, but nevertheless, I'd like to ask, who in their daily lives is using LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook for professional reasons, not just. So there we are. That may be because it may explain why everyone's in the room, but nevertheless.
Yeah, but I don't think we're saying that. I totally agree. I do completely agree with you. But I think what we are all, I think, cohesively trying to say is that we should be doing more of it as an industry. We need to embrace it. We have to embrace it, and we have to go back into our organisations and explain to people why they shouldn't be scared of using it, why they should engage, why they should embrace it, and not because it's there and they just have to, but explain to them the reasons why they need to.
But as far as IMO, at least, I think that now the fact that, you know, they've created this position, and that beforehand journalists would have to really dig far or try to read some really long text to kind of understand what came out of a meeting or an assembly or what's the latest on emissions. And now we're offering short videos on YouTube, or we're offering some quick podcasts on a given topic. Because, you know, we get questions from journalists, and sometimes we're like, okay, clearly there's a lot of interest on polar code right now, so let's get an expert in house and take these questions and be proactive and do a quick Q&A. So we're putting out an audio piece. And so we're trying to basically package it differently in different ways, and then putting it on all these platforms. I think that's a really good way to be more transparent. I mean, it is very difficult sometimes, because we work with partners, for example, Piracy, there's a Security Council maybe involved, so obviously we have to leverage that, but we're trying very hard to be, you know, to share more information with the public at large, and that brings also the seafarers. It's only the second edition this year, but as you might have heard, IMO has now got an official day called the Day of the Seafarer. It was launched last year. It was, you know, very sort of first edition, so we didn't have very much time, but now we've had more time, and we're really, this is the one thing that is not so technical for IMO, and we're really trying to reach the public at large, and that's where social media is very key for us to engage and go beyond the shipping industry and reach the public and tell them about seafarers, and involve seafarers themselves also wanting to contribute to this global conversation. And this is a new initiative, but it is now there, and hopefully it'll grow, and it's a collaborative campaign. So everybody, you know, is, if they want to participate, they can. So, sorry, quick point that I forgot to mention is the tracking and analytics. We've not talked about it, but it's extremely important in social media, because you really realize who's your audience, who's on which platform. And for example, for IMO Facebook, you know, I've been doing a lot of tracking, and we have a lot of seafarers and captains and cadets and of different, you know, different position. And so we've realized now Facebook is our kind of way, dialogue, conversation with seafarers, and we really try to sort of nurture that a bit more now that we've realized this is a way for them to share their, you know, their thoughts on what we should improve, give them a voice and a platform. Definitely, well, now that it's very new things, but I monitor it, And whenever they're, well, we have questions and we try, if they have questions, we'll try to answer them quickly as possible. But we also kind of keep a log, and if there's major topics that are coming back, well, then, you know, we, it goes back into the bureaucracy of the hierarchy, but it does get to the office of the Secretary General to consider. This is not an example that came from the seafarers, but from the industry and the press, for example, the whole, from the industry, because of the Costa Concordia, because there was so much questions for passenger ship, there is now a new agenda item on the next Maritime Safety Committee to address this, because the feedback is, well, we want to know more, so there's an agenda item that's been created just specifically for this. So that's a way of responding to the feedback.
Well, I think what's interesting, of course, is you don't, generally CEOs don't give their email addresses out, but in the case, not to dwell on Carnival, but the CEO was effectively tweeting 30 times a day. In other words, you know, he was representing the company on a daily basis.
And what I think he tweeting about?
Probably very positive things about, you know,
wins policies and
about jet skiing on cruise lines. And
yeah, I think it was all very kind of happy-go-lucky, yeah. Kind of, you know, I'm your man, you're CEO on the street, my duty. And then when it went all pear-shaped, you know, he put a kind of, actually, to be fair to him, he put a message out to say, right, listen, I'm actually dealing with this crisis, I haven't got time to tweet. Which actually is kind of fair enough, but
reassuring.
Again, it probably, hindsight would suggest that it was a very tough judgment call, but polls would say that he made the wrong decision based on the personality he built up from his 30-day tweeting to then suddenly go dark when, you know, it went wrong.
But there's a really wide gulf, isn't there, between a major cruise company and your dry bulk company.
Yeah.
And I think from the dry bulk company's perspective, I think something on your point about, you know, how social media might spread an industry. I don't speak for your company, but I was going to use the example of a dry cargo company earlier. Yeah, for most of them, the idea of having any kind of media policy, except in the context of dealing with a crisis, is something they're not interested in. You know, they've got half a dozen, a score of major charterers, and maybe you could use digital comms, so you might MSN them, or, you know, just the way that the telephone or telex or all the rest of these things are tools for communicating. But it doesn't mean they have a policy, or it's not about public relations or reaching out to a media audience or any external stakeholders. It's just a way of talking to people to get your business done. But they don't want to have any kind of communication with anybody external to that fairly narrow circle at any time if they can help it, really. You know, and most of the crisis response, I think, where you might want to have a specifically social media policy in place, is designed to get you from an operational perspective, from A to the other side of, you know, wherever you are in the crisis, and get on with your normal life.
I completely concur with all of that, but also I think it's about relationships as well, and I think that, you know, Neil's not that scary. Shirtless aren't that scary, and I think it is about companies engaging not just with the media, but directly with whoever their target stakeholders might be, whether it's trade associations or industry bodies, or it's about having a dialogue, and I completely agree. When things do go wrong, you're not scrabbling round. You can actually hopefully pick up the phone to somebody that you know, have a conversation with somebody that has context about who you are, what you've done in the past, why this might have happened. You're not wasting valuable time trying to get somebody up to speed when really all they want is to get to the crux, understandably, to get straight to the crux of the matter. So, you know, I think it is about, for me, public relations is about relationships as much as anything else, and as is, I guess, business.
I would just add one point to that, and I realise this sounds like we're all concurring, but, you know, I think the analogy we often use, and I know we talk about Maersk a lot, but, you know, genuinely 5 years ago, there was one guy writing a newsletter. That's no exaggeration. For Maersk, and genuinely now they have 10 full-time communications people, and I don't think they're that daft, you know. And I realized they're in the container liner markets where retailers are very much applying pressure to them. A lot of that's to do with their CSR policies, but it's also to do with the fact that it is a commoditized market. And the only differentiators are narrowing to brand a lot of the time. And I don't think the tanker market or the bulk market are completely immune to that either. So I think in that sense, you know, there is a shift, and at the risk of concurring too much, that's certainly what we're seeing.
So. Maersk is a good case in point because, 5 years ago it was a basket case in terms of the media. Anderson came in from his brewing background.
That's right.
And he just turned the whole culture around. And now they can't do enough for us. And I think they would say that for a start, for a lot of those middle management people, it's very scary for them because they come from a culture where you don't talk to the media because, you know, they're out to get us. And it's changed. And they've found it a pleasurable experience.
Yeah.
And Maersk are more than happy now to work with us. Yeah.
Zima said you're not that scary.
Yeah, that's right.
And actually, Maersk really need you at the moment, don't they? Because let's face it, like everyone else, they're not really making the money for the investors that they need to be making. And actually, there's two routes to go there. You can get pilloried or you can get a kind of an easier ride. And I think if you engage with people, you generally, by building that relationship, you generally get an easier ride because people know more about where you're coming from and why you're doing
it. It's all human nature, isn't it?
It's human nature, yeah. None of this is rocket science, is it, really? It's just basic. I think Bloomberg yesterday or today I saw was saying that over the last 4 years, the top 80 listed shipping companies have lost $99 billion of value.
Sorry?
That's
real money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
That was Bloomberg, yeah. That was my wife.
Yeah. Yeah, you would.
We should put that together, and that was and tweeted it, and it's one of their biggest success stories in terms of tweet value.
Well, obviously, in IMO, it's still a new thing, and the culture of information, in my small team, we are trying to educate, I suppose, our directors and supervisors of different departments. They are obviously, when we talk about social media, in fact, we gave a small presentation yesterday to the directors, and one of their first questions was, well, but how do we control this and this, and we're like, well, that's the thing, we cannot control everything. You know, of course we can control some of it, but we don't want to control everything either, because that's the nature of social media, to have the feedback to say, oh, listen, this is actually maybe a negative feedback, but it's valuable and it's true. So we have to continue to spread this culture of dialogue and conversation, really. So it's some people are really open to it and understand the value. But obviously, it's not over, and we really have to sort of change this traditional thinking and how IMO shares its information.
Can I pick up back on the video question? I think video is absolutely critical to the growth of the internet. It really is where it's all going to be. We have a site called shippingpodcasts.com, which some of you may have been familiar with, and we've got over 900 audio podcasts available for free to go and download. And we take market reports, law reports, insurance reports directly from brokers, banks, law firms. So it's kind of primary source information, and they generally end up being between 3 and 8 minutes long, so between a tube ride or two. But what we haven't got there is lots of video at the moment, and it's picking up on what Corinne said, that it's the resource intensity of it. So we're recording, we have a couple of microphones here, we're recording audio from today and tonight or tomorrow morning. You can go to shippingpodcasts.com and download it, and so can all the people who aren't here. If we were to do that with video, there is going to be the editing process is just a little bit slower. The bandwidth cost is higher, although it's coming down. So, for us, we will certainly shift a lot of that into video over the course of this year and next. But audio has a place as well.
And also, interestingly, so if I may just add, from our client perspective, would we want to work on a video on behalf of a client just so it gets a small number of hits on Lloyd's List when we can get an article online and in a newspaper.
And it takes time to build an audience. I mean, we're about to hit 7 million downloads of our podcast, but the graph is one that's built. We've been doing it for 900 and something episodes. We've been doing it from the time when, it was only me listening. whereas now, actually, we genuinely, have quite a large audience, and we do translate some into Mandarin as well, so we have an audience out in China. But that doesn't come overnight. You can't just overnight go and say, rank, bam, we want 50,000 downloads of that. And that's really leveraging the ability to use other networks. So iTunes for us is a really, really key part of that process. Now, iTunes don't feed back the data to us in the way that we would like, because Apple just don't, which is really frustrating. But it's not so frustrating I'd stop using iTunes, because it is the most significant platform for distribution. And I think that's the thing of just letting some of this stuff go and seeing what happens and sticking with it for a while.
I think it does depend on content as well, and I think that's really important. I know one of my clients, Kitty Wake, nothing to do with media relations at all, but they are trying, they're condition monitoring experts, and they're trying to do a lot more video because what I think was mentioned earlier about, I think Karima, it was something that you mentioned, rather than them writing a really in-depth, technical, hard to understand document that would probably be in English and trying to be understood by people across the globe, they are now creating videos of how to use some of their products. Which are being really well received. Yes, it takes effort for them to put them together and construct, but actually they're being really well received. And actually a byproduct of that is that some of the condition monitoring reliability media are saying, do you know what, this is actually really useful for our readers, but that's secondary to their original purpose for it.
Funny, when we evaluated the demographics on video after some of our campaign in video we've posted, videos, the demographic is, the highest segment was from 45 to 55 years old. So compared to Facebook, where we had a younger audience as well, and Twitter, some of the people are still not quite understanding it in the industry. Videos was right at this, older sort of segment, so people do enjoy video, and we thought the return on investment in video was really high. So yeah.
Not that old. Any final comments from anyone?
I'd just like to ask about approvals for response.
Please.
Because I work in a company where it's very strict processes, and if speed is of the essence, how do you manage?
Yeah.
Do you have authority to say what you think from a prepared list of lines to take, or do you take judgment?
Yeah, well, it varies. But the one thing is, in terms of the policy, I'm the only one who tweets, for example, in the whole organizer. Nobody else can tweet. And obviously, when it's something very technical, we do have sometimes the green light from the in-house expert if it's the right amount of percentage or something. And then, by experience, obviously, I get with judgment, I start to think, okay, I can retweet this, or I can easily comment. I start to understand as well, but it's very, some of the very sensitive things, they will need approval. But not from the Secretary General in this very bureaucratic way, because there would be no way that we could, have a Twitter account. It would be ridiculous. We'd have to wait for a week to get approval on a tweet. but at IMO, people actually, before my arrival, they were thinking, how is this going to work? Because at IMO, everything, needs to go approve all the way to the Secretary General. So how are we going to tweet? But they do trust that we can do our job properly and with the right level of judgment. And when times, when it's sensitive, then we know to refer to the expert. And so far, we've not published something that has created any.
So prior to commencing the tweets, was there a preparation of material?
Because I drafted a social media strategy for the organization with policy and everything, saying, okay, things we will tweet about in the first, So obviously we gave ourselves sort of a range, yeah.
But I think that is, for me, that's the crux almost of this whole conversation, is that social media is not sort of a standalone communications activity. It has to be strategic. Otherwise, there will be snags. And I think that it's about preparation. It is about going back to the key corporate messaging and understanding about how that is then packaged for all of the different communications channels that are relevant to your organisation.
Well, I think we should draw to a close now. Thank you, everyone. I mean, I think what's come across is that the media still has a distinguished role as a trusted source of information, but that it's going to have to adapt. And indeed, you know, in fairness, particularly to the trade media that we are so familiar with, I believe they are. And I generally, from our perspective, have seen quite a seismic change over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. If you're going to use social digital media, don't jump in. I think that's the lesson. Particularly with Twitter. Twitter needs to be managed. You need a careen. It's a time and resource sucker. And not just in terms of physically tweeting, but ensuring that you have the right message and you're saying the right thing. Clearly, if you are going to use social and digital media on a consistent basis, don't stop if there's a crisis or indeed something else. You know, I think it strikes me that there needs to be a consistency of messaging, particularly if you want to get into James's top 40. And ultimately, and this for us as Blue resonates, and I'm glad to hear it's sort of been concurred, is that, you know, whatever you're saying, it needs to be consistent with your business objectives and your communication messages. It needs to be managed.
And lawful.
Lawful, indeed.
Because you're publishing.
Indeed. and we've seen some arrests this week for Twitter. And maybe there will be one in the shipping industry in the not too distant future. So thank you, everyone. A few further housekeeping notes. There are copies of Fair Play in a traditional media form on the table, along with some IMO material in a very traditional media form. Please help yourselves. We do quite a lot of lobby work and public affairs work at the IMO, and I'm just delighted to hear that we don't have to do any of that anymore. We can just you know, ply Corinne with lots of lunches, and that job's done, because clearly she is leading the line in terms of what the IMO is saying in many senses. I think in that sense today's been very interesting. I suspect it won't be that long before our dry bulk or tanker sectors are looking at employing someone along the digital and social media lines. Please don't forget shippingpodcast.com. Be one of the thousands of people downloading that. And I'd like to finally thank the panel. They're all extremely busy people. And I personally find it really interesting today. So thanks to them. And please hang around. There's some wine, I believe, coming out. The most important part of the day is actually, you know, asking individuals questions and networking, after all. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.